Today's show is brought to you by Bob's Red Mill, sharing nothing but the best in whole grain nutrition and committed to their mission of good food for all. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
My name is Hannah Forden. I'm the membership coordinator at Heritage Radio Network, but even before I joined the team, I loved listening to HRN during my subway commute. It made the time go quickly and left me feeling inspired for the day ahead. HRN listeners tune in from all over the world, but there are a few traits that we all have in common, no matter where we listen from: a curious palate, the fierceness to make a difference, and a hunger for lifelong learning about the culinary world. As you know, Heritage Radio Network is a listener-supported nonprofit. To deliver the most ambitious, entertaining, and of-the-moment stories in 2018, we need your help. We need to raise $150,000 by December 31st to accomplish these goals and to keep your favorite shows on the air. Together, we can make this HRN's most exciting, impactful, and delicious year yet. No matter how much you choose to give, you'll feel awesome next time you tune in, knowing that we wouldn't be here without you. Become a member by donating today. Join us at heritageradionetwork.org/donate, and you'll immediately start enjoying benefits such as VIP invitations to HRN events, where you will mix and mingle with your favorite hosts. Plus, we have great member swag. Show off your HRN pride with a t-shirt, or keep your hands safe in the kitchen with an HRN pot holder. Memberships also make a perfect holiday gift for all the foodies in your life. This year, why not give the gift of food radio? You'll hear your generosity in action for the year to come. Help keep our lights on and our mics hot by pledging your support today at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Thanks for listening.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. Good morning, Caitlin. What's this? You're laughing, but you have a look of displeasure. I probably know what it is, but go ahead. I have to laugh
because it's dark outside. It's 6 in the morning.
Right.
It's super dark. It's super cold.
Yeah.
And here we are.
Well, you would be up anyway, but you would not normally be doing one of these intros before you head off to your office. I appreciate it.
Of course. I just, you know, don't know how many more I have in me, but I'm happy to help you out.
Well, this is our favorite time of the year that we're going into. It's the holiday season. We're recording this Tuesday morning of Thanksgiving week. We're starting to socialize more. We're shopping for the food we're going to be making Thursday for the holiday. And the upshot of all that is that's all great, but we have no time. And people probably don't know this. Nobody knows this who's listening unless they know us personally. I don't know what it sounds like as Caitlin and I do these little sitcom-y intros, but Kate actually has a huge job helping to run the entertainment division at Scholastic, which, as most people probably know, is one of the biggest publishers in the world. It's the biggest children's book publisher in the world, and leaves the house at about 6:30 every morning. And so this was literally the only time we could get this intro in. I appreciate it.
Of course. I'm happy to be here. Okay. I just, you know, it's just dark out.
All right. Well, we'll get a handle on the schedule this coming. We'll do it Sunday morning over coffee.
Yeah,
in the light of day. We'll do that. Maybe, if we don't get overwhelmed by life. Well, it is Thanksgiving week, and it's my favorite holiday. I don't know how listeners to this show, I think most people who listen to the show are probably in the industry, and unless you're still in culinary school or own a restaurant, but you still may be doing this, you're probably working. A lot of people listening to this show are probably working on Thanksgiving, which is amazing. I was talking to someone yesterday. I remember back in the 90s when restaurants in New York, where we are, started to be open on Thanksgiving. That was like a big deal. It just didn't used to happen.
I was so happy about that.
Right. We probably every third Thanksgiving do it in a restaurant. But, you know, for people who work in the business, it just added one more holiday, one more time that the rest of the world is chilling, spending time with their families, enjoying a day off, and you all are working your butts off. So thank you for that. I mean, I don't know if that sounds corny, but I really mean it. It's just one more way in which cooks kind of have this long-suffering life that I at least appreciate. Before we jump into the intro, and I should say our guest this week is Marcus Samuelson, who most people probably know. He's a very prominent guy who we've known since he showed up in New York as a 24-year-old. I used to be his publicist, and we love Marcus Samuelson. I do want to just quickly say we had two wonderful reviews this week, and I am probably going to do this for a little bit because I just think it's so awesome. Dan Cook's Stuff threw us a review on iTunes. For cooks, chefs, or anybody interested in this little thing of ours, I love the phrasing little thing of ours. I suspect you might be a Donnie Brasco fan, but maybe I'm wrong. This podcast is truly a gift. As a younger chef, building a career, balancing a life, and just trying to figure it all out, listening to this has been an amazing opportunity to really get to know some inspiring chefs in a way that no restaurant review or cookbook ever could, although some of these chefs have certainly written some very personal and profound cookbooks. Although I've enjoyed every episode, I feel like there is something special about the ones taped inside the restaurants. That's interesting. Thank you, Andrew, and all the chefs who have taken the time to talk with him. You're welcome, and I would echo the thank you to the chefs. It's been an amazing first season. Here's another great name. We had one good name last week. This one comes from someone who has named themselves Smack Me. Don't laugh. They wrote a really nice review.
No, I love it. I also love their name.
Smack Me?
Yeah, it's hilarious.
Okay. If I had sound effects, I would do a smack sound effect. I don't have a sound effect board here. I'm not even wearing a shirt.
That's so true.
I've been listening to this podcast since the day the first episode was posted and have spent each week looking forward to the next one. I know most of the chefs that have been interviewed and work for one who will be featured in an upcoming episode. I'm wondering who it is and if I know this person who's called Smack Me. But each episode has given me new insight into the styles, thought processes, and histories of the chefs I thought I already knew a lot about. Even more exciting have been the episodes featuring chefs I did not know of, specifically the Stephen Harris episode. I love that episode myself. My favorite yet. As someone who is relatively new to the cooking profession, I have been inspired and motivated by the stories shared on this podcast, and I would encourage anyone interested in food craft and what it means to be driven by passion to listen to this incredible podcast. Well done, Andrew. Thank you, Smack Me. I'm not laughing at your name at the end here. That's really moving. Both of those are really moving. Thank you for people who have taken the time to rate or review us. It means a lot to us. So thank you for that. Okay, Marcus Samuelson. Marcus Samuelson, you all know Marcus. He got known almost 25 years ago when he was the youngest chef ever to receive a 3-star New York Times rating when he took over the kitchen at Aquavit Restaurant in New York City. It's a Scandinavian restaurant, still is, although he's been gone from it for some years now. Marcus has gone on to open Red Rooster in Harlem. He's opened a Red Rooster in London. He's opened other restaurants around the world, and he's been on television. He wrote an amazing memoir called Yes, Chef. And he, Caitlin, how do we even begin to sum this up? Marcus has been, I'm not going to say it's totally unheard of that somebody reaches his level of success and fame without kind of losing who they are. But I think as much as anybody we've known over these years, he epitomizes that notion.
Marcus is really amazing. He's humble. He's talented. He's friendly. He's loyal. He's really, really awesome.
Yeah. And he also, he's just a force in nature. He has all this stuff going on and he always seems together, calm. He's always dressed.
I was going to say that, but I didn't want you to think I was being shallow, but man, that guy can dress.
I said in an article once that, you know, his everyday street clothes are fashionable enough to sit in the front row at the Grammys. I mean, he's just like, he always looks great. I wrote a piece a few years ago called Grains of Sand on my blog, which tells Marcus's story and shares a lot of the very kind of deep feelings I have about him. I'm going to post that on our Facebook page. So our Facebook page does have the handle at Chef Podcast. I think you can also look it up as Andrew Talks to Chefs. I'm going to have that posted by the time this episode airs. for people who want to read it. I think it really captures who Marcus is. I met with Marcus last week. He's just opened this past weekend a restaurant called Marcus B&P, and that is in Newark, New Jersey. It's his first restaurant in Newark. It is a big, lofty, L-shaped restaurant centered around an open kitchen. There is a bar. There are provisions, which is kind of a thing people are doing now. You can come in and pick up things to take home. And it's obviously a fully functioning restaurant. It's a little bit distinct among his repertoire in that they actually have pizzas there. And when we interviewed, he was kind enough to send me home with one for our kids. And it was awesome. And they weren't even open yet. He's got a new show coming up called No Passport Required on PBS, which he's doing in partnership with Vox Media, which is all about American immigrant communities. And when I got to the interview, he had just finished a day of media. There were local journalists and photographers and camera crews all over the restaurant. I get there, and, you know, within a couple of minutes of the appointed time, you know, I was ushered over to a counter. I set up the stuff. He came over and he stopped everything for about an hour. And in the midst of all this, we did an interview, which is typically him, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that's Marcus right there. Yeah. Like, doesn't he will make time for you because he's known you forever and he's a really good friend.
Yeah, I mean, he's the best. So that is it. I want to say a happy Thanksgiving to you, Caitlin.
Happy Thanksgiving, Andrew.
Thank you for doing this. And I promise we'll find a better time.
I think I see the sun coming up.
Well, okay. That may be wishful thinking, but I do appreciate it. Thank you. And here you go, everybody. My interview with Chef Marcus Samuelson, recorded at Marcus B&P in Newark, New Jersey. I hope you enjoy it. So Marcus, you're opening another restaurant.
Yeah, man, it's exciting time. We're both laughing and we're both saying, "Are you crazy or what?" That's what you're saying.
I feel like you open restaurants the way Stephen King writes horror stories.
No, I mean,
I say that as a fan of Stephen King.
Yeah. The funny thing about this, Andrew, is that I feel like I'm slow.
Do you?
I feel like I'm very, very slow. It took us 5 years to open London.
Wow.
Right?
I didn't realize. We talked about that when you came out to see me and Jimmy on the old show.
And this has been 3.5 years, 4 years in making.
In the making.
Yeah. So coming out here so many times, daytime, afternoon, nighttime, eating at Ironbound, eating in downtown Newark, and seeing it sort of evolve, this big complex coming on board. But
how long did you have this space?
I mean,
when you give that time frame, that was from like when you wanted
when we started
when you decided
this,
you wanted to do something in Newark, or Ron, was it specifically this space?
When Ron, my partner, asked me about it, I was drawn to the fact that Newark is such a historical community in terms of culture, right?
Right.
Whether it's, you know, I'm a huge fan of hip hop, so, you know, thinking about the Noted by Nature and Queen Latifah, and thinking about everything from Whitney to Lauryn Hill and Fugees, all this sort of incredible energy that Newark sent to the world. But also go way before that, you think about Edison and you think about the entrepreneurs and the ideas that came out of this because this was a port town. So I'm like, well, how can we layer that?
Yeah.
And that's when it gets interesting to me.
Yeah.
And it's similarities to Harlem, being both an African-American hub, of course, but also immigrants.
Right.
And if you go over to Ironbound, 5 minutes from here, you see Portuguese American, you see Cuban American, you see Italian American.
Yeah.
So this layer of people that's constantly coming to it.
Yeah.
And that inspired us in our food.
Yeah. So tell me, why don't we just orient people who are listening? Yeah. This is called Marcus B&P.
Yeah.
And what does that stand for, and what's going on here?
Well, the B&P stands for two things. I mean, back pocket, we're not on Broad. We are on a beautiful street called Halsey Street, which the street reminds me a little bit of West Village, I feel like. It has that, it's a walking street to me. There are some townhouses here. Yeah. It's a silent street, right?
Right. It has that that quiet. Yeah. In the winter, it must be like
it's quiet.
Dead quiet here. Is there snow on the ground?
So as a crazy, pretty sweet, I think, that's great.
Right.
It's not sort of the walking distance. It's not a walking. Yeah. Right. And I like that. I'm like, wow, this is, you can create almost that West Village walking.
Yes.
In another community. So I like that. And then the B also stands for bar, of course, which is going to be a... great sort of cocktail program, mixology-driven program that we want to do.
Yeah.
And then P is for provision or parlor, right? So what you see here is nothing but local entrepreneurs from Newark that we purchase stuff from, whether it's peri-peri sauce or hazelnuts or honey. So you can come in here at the provision side and just get your local what's up, you know
get
what I
mean?
Get
some stuff.
Get some stuff, yeah. Exactly.
It's great.
Fill your swag bag with some local stuff.
Right.
And it's also a quicker part of the restaurant. We can do our half pies from here.
Right.
We can do our you know, our signature dishes from here.
Yeah. What? How do concepts happen for you at this point? Like, do you, was it like you decide you're going to come to Newark, mm-hmm. and then does the rest of it flow from that usually, or do you have sort of a lot of concepts? You know, I think about young cooks, right? We've talked about this a lot this season on the show. You know, you talk about young cooks always have a notebook where they have ideas for dishes, right? Yeah. Do you, at this point in your life, your career, your creative life, do you sort of have a list either in your head or on paper or on a iPad or something of just sort of half-formed concepts, thoughts, ideas, looking for a home?
I don't think about it from a concept. I really look at it from a village perspective.
Yeah.
What was here before me?
Right.
Where is this village going?
Yes.
And how can we do our interpretation and add something delicious to that? So in Shoreditch, it was very much about the Jewish and the Bangladeshi community.
Shoreditch is a neighborhood in London.
In London.
Were you open, what, now about a year ago?
7 months.
7 months.
So really being inspired by that.
Yeah.
And then also representing Harlem. So how much, what stays, what goes out. Yeah. Like, you know, that's, you know, what was historically important.
Yeah.
Newark is the same thing. Like, I don't think about it as concept.
Yeah.
But then we might add something on top of that
right. That
could be a concept,
yes.
Right? So in Shoreditch, we added a taqueria.
Yes.
Because of East Harlem and El Barrio.
Right.
Well, someone can say that part you can roll out as a concept.
Yeah.
But that's not the first thing I think about.
Yeah.
Right? Here, we make all our pizza, all our pasta.
Yes.
At some point, maybe we just do the pies, right, at some place, right?
So right.
There might be an aspect of that, but I think about it more as knee-deep of what's been relevant, what's important, what's the integrity of this place?
Yeah.
How can we take... And they're very different components. Working with Aero Farms is very different than working on the dough.
Yes.
Understanding sort of finding the peri-peri maker is very different than understanding deliveries needs are here. So
right.
But they're all drenched in listening to me and what does the community tell you?
Yeah, that's interesting. What at this point, first of all, I have to back up. So, you know, I always record the intros after this.
Yeah.
So I don't know what I'll have said about us, but, you know, you and I go way back.
Yeah.
I met you, you were like 24?
Yeah, 23. 24.
You had just gotten the 3-star review at Aquavit. Youngest person ever to do that in the New York Times. I was your publicist along with Phil Baltz.
With long hair, by the way, at that point. Very important.
What, Phil?
Phil had long hair. You have still your hair.
Okay,
but,
so...
Phil had long hair.
Okay, so...
Down on 20th Street.
For people listening to this, Phil, I'm going to leave that alone.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, Marcus, because I look back and... you know, obviously I'm thrilled for all your success. You obviously work incredibly hard. I have to say I'm not surprised by it. Like, I look back at knowing you when you were we were kids together.
Yeah.
And this is almost 25 years ago. And there seems like there was always this sort of inevitability about you, this energy about you, this positivity about you.
Yeah.
I'm not just flattering you, but did it feel that way to you? Could you have even conceived at that age that things were going to get this big for you? And it probably makes you uncomfortable to talk about yourself that way, but it is...
I don't think about it like that. I think it really about... You know, I grew up with amazing work ethic from generationally in my family, and I think about representing that work ethic. That my father was a fisherman's boy.
Yeah.
But he became a geologist and ran his own company.
Mm-hmm.
The journey he did between very rudimental blue collar and village instinct,
yes,
to operating and building maps and creating understanding where earthquakes would happen in Japan to, yeah, Iceland. You know, it's a very broad level of sophistication, but also journey.
Yeah.
Right? But I remember I'm a representative of my grandmother coming from poverty in Sweden, right? Mm-hmm. But what was it connected? Food. My father, fish, and my grandmother made everything, right?
Yeah.
So I think about, am I representing, that's the ethos of that. And then having the luxury or the opportunity to go back and meet my birth father, mm-hmm, in Ethiopia, and meeting him as a tribe leader,
yeah,
talk about energy, talk about different drive,
yeah,
right? But so I know that in me, these are those things,
yeah,
one through adoption and upbringing and one through just DNA. And then the ambition of coming to America. But I'm not here representing me. I'm here representing also the hundreds of people that opened the doors for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I maybe now
you mean earlier in your career.
Of course, and still.
Yeah.
You know, I think I love the industry more today than I did when I started.
Yeah.
And any time when you work for something for 30 years and you can be more in love with it.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
That is success for me. Not,
yeah,
the monetary, not the all these things. Like, that's exciting. Working with young adults, looking at their ambition and saying, yeah, we can do this.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
I was wondering, so my question for you was going to be, what at this point, what drives you to want to do more restaurants? Is that what it is?
Well, many things. I have a lot of young cooks,
yeah,
that I think should be given a shot.
Yeah.
That's one thing.
And you'd like to keep them in the fold.
Keep them in fold.
This is the Wolfgang Puck view of the world, yeah, that you create. You keep people, yeah, good people around you by creating more and more projects. And you grow your professional family.
And by the way, a lot of them come from very, very different backgrounds.
Yeah.
And they never saw themselves as small business owners.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the beauty of hospitality.
Right.
You can have a not so perfect upbringing or coming from a messed up situation, but you did a turnaround.
Yeah.
And now you're a line cook, then eventually sous chef, and now it's attainable that you can actually one day own your own business. That's what this journey is about.
Mm-hmm. So that's one motivator.
That is a big motivator. That's,
yeah,
a big motivator.
It is.
And then also, I mean, the two things that I never saw in kitchen when I was coming up was women,
yeah,
and people of color.
Uh-huh.
And for me, that was highly confusing, being a black man.
Yeah.
And didn't want to lower my ambition.
Yeah.
And also the people that taught me cooking,
yeah,
was all women.
Yeah.
My sisters, my grandmother. So I'm,
right,
like, these are amazing cooks. What do you,
right,
mean? What do you, I come from a tribe of that.
Yeah.
So I did decide pretty early on, the minute I get a chance to hire,
yeah,
I want to enhance that.
Yeah. And that's part of the culture of your business.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And people are drawn, you want to work around that very,
yeah,
often. You know?
How, where do you think we are in the, I mean, you know, there have been these horrible stories, obviously, in this industry and other industries. We don't need to name names.
Yeah.
Everyone knows who they are. I named them a couple of weeks ago on the show. You think we're at a moment where things are going to improve for people? Do you think this is the way it's being talked about on, like, political talk shows? And do you think there's a moment of reckoning at hand that's going to improve professional life for women in this business?
I think, first of all, it's very important that we have this moment,
yeah,
of discussing it.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of, like anything, like it's a lot of, it takes a lot of courage to go out of your comfort zone and express something very personal, deeply personal that has happened and really telling the world or telling your community about this.
Yes.
So I applaud the women that step up and do that. Our industry constantly need to be reminded to be improved. We are an imperfect endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one way of doing that.
Right.
And, you know, we talked about it before. We've been very male-dominated.
Totally.
Which, for me, it's just not a modern way of working.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just not even, it's not smart. There is, you know. So we constantly need to remind, just like you would improve every aspect of your business, this is an area where we can improve. Diversity, it Look at civil rights movement. Look at women's movement.
Yeah.
Look at gay rights movement. They're all been rooted by incredible, encouraging, strong people that has said enough.
Right.
And out of that, which is cool about America, is comes a better process.
Yeah.
It ain't pretty.
Right.
It's not easy.
It's not.
But once 6-7 years from now, or whatever it might be, it's normally a process that sort of stabilizes, and there is a different process of working and seeing each other. And that's important.
Yeah, agreed. So let's shift gears. This restaurant.
Yes.
We're sitting here on the 15th, which is a Wednesday. You guys may be open, by the time this airs? What's the opening?
I think we'll open. We do soft opening over the weekend.
Right. So this airs a week from today.
Yeah.
So you guys will be soft open.
We're going to, as you see, there's no alcohol in the building yet.
Yeah.
But it will get here.
Right.
We start slow, maybe like we do 30 covers, and the computer's going to, all the beautiful stuff that you and I know, the computer's going to break down.
Yeah.
And it will be highly contested, passionate moments.
Yeah.
And somewhere, I think actually it's good to open around Thanksgiving because
it's quiet.
It's quiet, and
you're under
the
radar.
Break,
yeah, right.
And then we're probably opening fully right after that.
Yeah. So what, at this point, a couple of days out, what is going on? Can you take listeners through this? Like, what are you looking for?
Yeah.
What's the team going through? What happens in those last 48 hours?
For us, it's about repetition of the food and the steps of service.
Yeah.
Repetition of making those dishes. That's very important. Repetition of picking it up and understanding the simple things as table numbers to... Also, this restaurant has many different beats. It has this side.
So this side you're talking about, we're on the side street.
Yeah. So.
Which is where the bar is.
And the bar is very important.
And the provisions, right?
And the provisions, so.
This is an L-shaped room.
So for people to understand, hey, I can actually just order a half pie here, or I can actually come in just for a drink.
Yeah.
We know that, but that doesn't mean you know that, right?
So how does that get conveyed?
How does that get conveyed, and how do we walk people comfortably through that process? Then it's the dining room. That's the traditional dining room.
Yeah.
But wait a minute, is it? Because it's a very big open kitchen.
Yes.
So you are almost sitting in the kitchen.
Yes.
But we wanted that because we're making fresh pizza, fresh pasta.
Yeah.
So you're part of the process.
Yeah.
And then outside on the atrium side, it's probably the last piece of this that we're going to add on, which is a patio outside. There's an indoor patio, right?
Okay.
Where
this is a residential building above us?
It's a residential building, not that big, but like it's
right.
a residential
but
building.
So the atrium is the basically the lobby of that building.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there you're going to be able to, drink some wine, eat some food.
Nice.
And just, have this water hole come together from all those 3-4 different aspects, whether you go to NJ Pack, whether you're going and watching a hockey game,
yeah,
or whether you are just doing after work with your buddies,
yes,
or you're living in the community and you just want to come down and chat with someone in the bar.
Right. At this point, having opened the number of restaurants you've done, what is the sort of X factor still? When you went, in a new space with a new team, what are the things that can still trip up someone of your experience? Like, what are you on the lookout for?
Well, this restaurant for me, it's a heartbeat. It's a rhythm, right? And something like Red Rooster works today. That rhythm, that pulse came to us instantly. Not right away, but it came early because Harlem is such a vibrant community.
Right.
So the minute we opened the doors, Harlem told us what restaurant it would be.
Yeah.
Right? And so that you don't never know until the community will tell you what it will be.
Right.
Right? We can plan. We can talk as much as we want, Andrew. Newark will decide what this will be.
That's interesting.
And we're just happy to serve. And then it's about taking your restaurant back after that.
Right.
And
but when you say it'll tell you, what do you make? Do you talk to customers? Do you solicit feedback?
Sure.
I mean, you just
I remember
work
the early
the room
days,
and do that?
I remember the early days of working Red Rooster. On a Sunday, people didn't leave between brunch and dinner.
You mean they would hold court?
Yeah, we stay. And so what do you do? Like, you can't say to someone, you have to leave.
Yeah.
Oh, you could, but then you have another set of problems.
Right.
So we just have to celebrate that and say, you know what? We didn't think we would serve any food in the bar. Guess what? Menu is the same across the dining.
That solved the problem.
That was also saying, hey, it's your restaurant.
Right.
We just happen to work here sometimes.
Right.
And then that different back and forth of pushback, right?
Yeah.
But being... Not that's why whether it's Yelp or whether it's customer service report, they're not pretty in terms of when you get them in your face.
Yeah.
But they're so important because restaurants, it's not just playing it in an office and telling the customer what it should be.
Yes.
The customer, American customers, pretty quickly
yeah.
will tell you what they want it to be.
Yeah.
You know, and that's right. a great wake-up call. And being humble enough to say, you know, okay, juxtaposition, change. But that doesn't mean that we care the identity of who we are.
Right.
Right?
But it's a dialogue.
Yeah, it's a dialogue.
Inherently, that's what yeah. the hospitality, right? Isn't that what the hospitality business is?
Yeah. I mean,
it's a living situation every night.
It's a breathing, living situation that you have to respond to. But there's certain things you can set. I mean, we don't have tablecloths here. So we think it will be a semi-casual, like very much a around comfort food.
Yeah.
A pricing you put appropriately. But guess what? If you are a business guy from Prudential and you want a business dinner,
yeah.
you can order up. We're not going to tell you that you can't celebrate here.
Right.
You can order up.
Yep. What do you feel like your experience of coming to New York from overseas as a young man?
Yeah.
I mean, you've referred to yourself as an immigrant.
I am an immigrant.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't think of you yeah. like that, but I mean, I guess you are.
Well, Andrew, this moment has been the
But even back in the day, I didn't think of you that way.
Well, I mean, I think we all have to look at our history as a sense of luxury, right?
Sure.
And for me, the luxury of being an African man, a black man,
yeah.
and having the experience of living in several different countries,
yep.
but being also an immigrant, the aspiration of coming to America, coming yeah. to New York.
Yeah.
And I always look at that movie, Coming to America, as that wasn't a joke to me. That was real, you
right,
know?
Right.
And so many can relate to that journey. And my point is, that's a blessing.
Yeah.
And I think at this moment where immigration and diversity is very much challenged to its core,
yeah.
you know, I constantly want to combat and bring people together instead, you know, because, you know, even with the PBS show and the show we're going to do on Eater, No Passport,
yeah.
what are we going to do at the core? We're going to introduce, we're going to celebrate these incredible immigrant communities,
yeah.
show incredible stories and say, hey, we're so lucky that we all have this diversity.
Yeah.
We sure as hell eat better for it. We yes. drink better for it.
Yes.
And we understand each other much better for it. Take immigrants away from the American food scene.
Yeah. Right.
We would eat differently. Let's just agree on that. Now you take yeah. immigrants away from the food scene of hospitality.
Totally. I mean, in this country, yeah.
You know, a burger would be $100, maybe.
Yeah, yeah,
you know
yeah.
what
yeah.
I mean? So let's...
But what I was going to ask you was, do you feel like the experience of coming yes. to this country as a young person and succeeding, right? Do you feel like that, like when you talk about being attuned to your environment in a new restaurant, right? Do you feel like your own personal experience informs that? And by the same token, I wonder if it gives you, it's part of what fuels your desire to go into new places. You know, you do kind of, you have spread your wings yeah. geographically
yeah.
very wide,
yeah.
right? And I'm just wondering if that confidence came from being able to go to new places as a young person and acclimate and succeed.
It's a great question. No one has really asked me in that those terms, so that, thank you for that. I think that I'm extremely comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, working in Japan as a black little hungry cook kid,
yeah.
and I don't want to harp up on colors and race, but it puts you in very interesting juxtaposition situations, and the power it gives you when you can succeed in that situation, even though you don't speak the language, and you clearly, your hair is just different than your buddy's hair.
Sure. Like, well, you also had, it yeah. was like a sucker punch,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Not intentionally, but you had this name, Marcus
yes.
Samuelson.
Yes.
What was it's in the yeah. story in Don't Try This at Home, yeah. where you went yeah. to that hotel.
Yes, I messed up.
Where was that hotel?
In Switzerland, Victoria Jungfrau.
In Switzerland, yeah, and you were like, they sure as hell weren't expecting, you know, yeah. when they had my name on the application, yeah. they weren't expecting a black no. kid to show up.
But so I do think that has given me a certain level of comfort. But I do think that you are also in the present relating to people with their ambition.
Yeah.
And their sense of question that people ask me today.
Yeah.
I think I can relate, you know. I always say, I didn't have an uncle coming here. And what do you mean? What does that mean? Like, no, no. I had $300.
Yeah.
I didn't have an uncle to go to on the weekend, to go to upstate on the weekends.
Right.
And go to, and we can talk things over.
Right.
So my uncles became cooks.
Yeah.
My uncles became people like Jonathan Waxman. My uncle became people like Charlie Trotter.
Yeah.
Like Leah Chase became my auntie.
Uh-huh.
And it's not about money, but asking them, hey, Jonathan, how was the food scene in California 1982?
Yeah.
Like, hey, Leah, your restaurant is open before integration segregation.
Yes.
How did you serve all kinds of people?
Yes.
Well, I took a risk. She could be thrown in jail to do these things.
Yes.
Those are my aunties and my uncles.
How soon after you got here did you start making those connections?
Early. Charlie was there for me early.
Yeah?
I remember when Charlie came in 96 to my restaurant and said...
To Aquavit.
Yeah. He said, I'm going to help you.
Really?
That's what he said. I was like, what do you mean? You don't know what you need help with, but I'm going to help you.
Yeah.
And he saw something, but he didn't think it was he didn't think it was maximized, and he think I could do better.
He didn't think your talent was being maximized.
No, it's just like you clearly need somebody to edit you.
Really?
And I'm going to help you.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't even know what that means. So every now and then faxes came through. I'm coming to town. And he always ate at my restaurant.
Yeah.
And then about a week later, other faxes came through.
Right.
With his notes.
Yeah. Like what kind of stuff?
You need to take, he's been to Sweden, so he understands pickling and preserving and smoking and all of these different things. He said that, you know, simple things that maybe you smoke the salmon too much, create more sashimi quality. Okay, so pull it back. It's a preserving technique. But we don't need to preserve it today. It's
right, now we're purely using it for flavor. Yeah.
Exactly. So he could say that.
Yeah. That's so funny. I remember Tom Valenti used to use half the spices and what for gravlax.
Yes.
As the traditional recipe.
Yes, because he didn't need to.
Because you weren't preserving.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
And then he introduced me to the world, right? Pierre Gagné used to come with Charlie.
Yeah.
Or how did I meet Ferran? I met him through Charlie. So I owe these people a lot.
Yeah.
You know, Bobby... You know, coming,
Flay.
Yeah, Bobby Flay early, being in front of me and pushing me.
Yeah.
Like pushing me, like just, and it's in good ways, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like showing that New York is not going to be the Alfred Portal.
Yeah.
Alfred.
Yeah.
Amazing, amazing, amazing uncle.
Yeah.
Amazing.
How so?
Just being firm and,
yeah.
And you know, I was always impressed with Alfred because he really, not only did he bring that level of aesthetic to the food scene that we haven't seen before.
Right.
But again, year after year after year after year. I mean, I don't think people understand today what an important restaurant Gotham Bar and Grill was and still is.
Yeah.
And how, the cooks that came out of that.
Oh, it's crazy.
And, you know, many, many, many people.
So this became your New York family, basically.
So those were my aunts and uncles and...
Right.
And you know, Rita Jamais from La Caravelle being
Sweetheart.
Just around the corner from me.
Yeah.
And she's actually my neighbor in Harlem now. But always, if I need to borrow something, of course. Bien sûr. Boom, come and get it.
Yeah.
So, but then you could ask every now and then meeting, talking to Greg Kuntz, or like now my mentors are people like Danielle, right? Anytime I need something, I ask Danielle, and both for approval, but also for like, how would you do it, chef?
Yeah.
He calls me and said, this is how I would do it.
Yeah.
These are your two choices.
It's so funny. You talk about the community in this way, right? And it starts to sound very cliched and sentimental, but it really is. This is why I love being around it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Tony Bourdain has this great line.
And you're great at that, Andrew, because you bring people.
Well, thank you.
Through your content, you always look past and you look in the present, but you always bring people with you, and it's an opportunity for them to talk about their journey.
Well, thank you, Marcus.
Even if it's not the newest thing anymore. But that's very important.
Thank you.
That's very important.
Thank you very much. Yeah. But, you know, Bourdain has this great line in the beginning of Kitchen Confidential, because he was transitioning, right, from a chef to a writer.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, if my car breaks down at 2 a.m. in a bad neighborhood, I'm calling a cook. I'm not calling a writer.
Yes. And Tony's right about that. And
I always think of that line because I have way more friends who do what you do than do what I do. But I don't know why.
Because they give a shit.
Yeah, but I don't know how I fit into the whole thing. You know, I'm not
I mean,
I don't have the backbone of you guys.
No, but the community is filled with, to say that it's just filled with talented cooks, that's not a community.
Right.
We need front of the house. We need writers. We need, you know, people that carry the torch in so many, we need technology at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and that's when it is the community.
Yes. Right?
And we, sometimes we're on top of each other, sometimes we're against each other, but it's not really against each other because we all want the same. We want to improve.
Yeah. So you employ a lot of people now.
Yeah.
When you look at young cooks today versus when you were coming up, right? What do you, how do you see the, I mean, just very broadly speaking, how has that population of people in the United States changed from when you were coming up?
Well, many things haven't changed. A young cook that wants to move forward, the DNA is the same. Very much an outsider.
You still feel like that's accurate?
That maybe is an artist at heart, doesn't really know how to articulate it.
Yes.
Part craftsman.
Yes.
Cares about the product deeply.
Yeah.
Maybe didn't fit in into the traditional college route.
Yeah.
And landed on cooking and realized somewhere that I love it.
Yep.
That, those four walls haven't changed that much.
Interesting. Because I've gotten pushback on that point from some people, but I feel
so that
you're validating my feeling. Because I feel like that is
But then they look very different today, and that's the good stuff.
You mean they're trying to be a little more professional, a little more...
No, I wouldn't say that. They just come from different communities.
Oh,
today.
That's what you mean.
And that's the good news.
You mean there's a diversity in the kitchen that there wasn't
sometimes
before.
If it's not racial or spiritual, it can be from what part of town or where, what town they're cooking.
What do you attribute that to?
Internet, America, pushing, that good food is just not... It could be a French way, but it could also be the noodle bar, the way Reese Reichel wrote about them back in the day.
Yeah.
But it could also be that Mexican food, of course, can be on the same level. So what Cosme is doing is just as important as what La Bernadette is doing.
Yeah.
But the taco stand in Queens is also equally important as offal cooking in the Lower East Side.
So when you were coming up, this is interesting to me, because when you were coming up, because you do mention sometimes you're the only black person in the kitchen, right? But my sense has been that That maybe made you stand out, but I don't know. You've never described to me a lot of racist hostility coming your way, or you've never talked about it in those terms.
I mean, I think it can be multifaceted, right?
Yeah.
You can have failures and successes and feel things, but it was also a different time. It wasn't the time of expressing myself was not. I wanted to express it in the food.
Yeah.
So, there was no blogger culture. There was no Twitter or Instagram.
Yes.
And I just felt there's many ways to keep the fist up. And fist up was for me, still is, doing it in the food.
I guess what I wonder is, you know, I have two twin 13-year-olds, okay? They're aware, obviously, of race.
Of course.
It's meaningless to them. I remember when Barack Obama got elected, they had no idea why my wife and I were so...
It was emotional, you know?
They had no idea
what
the big deal was.
But that's
success. What I'm wondering is, in the kitchens today, does it seem very harmonious?
So I would.
That was where I was headed with this question. Does it seem more harmonious than it could have even back 20 years ago?
So I would anchor it back to two things.
Yeah.
The two things about the generation of Barack Obama... is really two things. Hip-hop, that is pop culture today.
Yes.
And internet, where those two things are met, because diversity that you can then travel through internet through different groups and learn about culture through different ways. And obviously, hip-hop today is pop culture, right?
Sure.
And anyone is in hip-hop.
Yeah.
Whether you are Muslim, Jewish, white or black, like that's just like... So that's the good news,
right? Yeah.
So culture is always there. Evolution and culture will always be there to solve those things, right?
Yeah.
And then I think diversity takes a long time to change.
Yeah.
And we are much better off today than we were 20 years ago when I started.
Yeah.
But I think diversity also taking on many different means. Like, if our industry has always been like, no one cares if you're gay chef. Who cares? Your food is great. Food is great.
This is what I was about to say. Because people have said this to me.
Food was one of the first industries to celebrate diversity and sexual orientation in many, many, many ways. The restaurant was a great place. And I'm sure that it wasn't an easy progress, but it's been something that that we progressed on. Now, race and diversity, it's all a little bit more linked to economic development.
Mm-hmm.
So who could get loans?
Right.
When were we considered a profession? Who was the line cook and the sous chef? And then who became the executive chef? There were gaps there, right?
Yeah.
And you kind of need, that's where the uncle rule comes in.
Well,
if your uncle never owned the corner restaurant,
well,
you don't know then how it is to own a restaurant.
I'll tell you a funny story. I was just talking with your associate, Lauren Monroe, right?
Yeah.
And I found out we were both used to be in the film business. She wanted to act. I used to want to write and direct. You know, what people pointed out at one point about the film business is when you talk about the economic situation, you know, there's the internship. Everyone gets an internship, or you go work in the mail. You have to be able to afford to take a job where you're not going to get paid, right? That is also true of the cooking trade.
And
the stage, everyone says, I went to France and I worked for no money for Six Bright or wherever you go now, Spain.
But
you have to be financed to do that.
And I would say that's where somewhere what I benefited. Being from a middle class and upper middle class family, I had to save my own money.
Yeah.
But I could do 3 years of internships.
Yeah.
I did, you know, I worked in between those internships.
Yeah.
Not as so graceful jobs, but I saved my own money.
Yes.
But I also knew that my parents would always support the bigger idea than the bigger pay.
Yes.
Just to have the luxury to discuss with your parents that.
Yeah.
They looked at my internships at college.
Yes.
So they know that I had to support that in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I was mature that I had worked summer jobs or had other gigs so I could afford it. But the just knowing that I wasn't a refugee or that I wasn't trapped out of money completely, that I could do that call, then it becomes an internal pride. I'm not going to call my parents because...
Yes.
But that's different than desperately relying on it. So I agree with you.
Right. But it is interesting, right? Because everyone talks about young cooks earning no money.
Yeah.
But there is still this element that you do sort of need a benefactor at some point if you want to do certain things.
Absolutely. And that's a very important point then. So there's many reasons what we hear, but I do think I'm very encouraged by the next generation.
Yes.
Just like, you know, take 15 years older than your daughters, you know, 28, 30.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you have great shining examples of incredible chefs.
Yes.
That are called, that has Latin, Asian, African American, Caribbean American background. They're just good cooks.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break.
Great.
Talking with Marcus Samuelson. We are at Marcus B&P in Newark, New Jersey, which is coming to life around us. And as always, I do want to remind everybody that if you'd like to subscribe to the show, you can do that on Stitcher or iTunes or wherever you subscribe to podcasts. And if you would like to leave us a review or a rating, as always, we would really appreciate it. It does help people find our show. We'll be right back after this break. Like a four-leaf clover, shining like a tenant bright, landing on all four feet like a cat who's ready for a wild night. My theme song and break music is from After School Specials album Double Barrel Single Entendre, which is available on iTunes.
Bob Moore is the founder of Bob's Red Mill, the top quality supplier of grains, flours, and general nutritional goodness from Oregon. He's talking to us about their signature millstones, a very specific way of making whole grain flour. So what's the secret, Bob?
Follow me to the mill room. Well, these are just like the millstones that the Romans used to grind their grains. In fact, these stones came from the same quarry near Paris, France, where the Romans got their stones. The company that makes our millstones pulls their quartz from the same quarry, and they make mills for us that are just wonderful.
Bob explains how the millstones grind much slower and at cooler temperatures than modern steel rollers. The process keeps the grains cool, preserving the flavor and nutrition.
look at what they produce. I love how they keep things simple and just right. All the nutrition is there, just like nature intended.
After almost 40 years in the milling business, they're serving up over 400 organic, gluten-free, and whole grain foods right here from the mill in Oregon, sending them off to destinations around the world.
We think we can make a difference by sticking to the traditional way of stone milling. And so, that's what we're doing.
To learn more about Bob's Red Mill and their mission to bring good food for all, visit bobsredmill.com/podcast.
And we are back at Marcus P&B in Newark.
B&P.
Yes. Sorry, my brain just misfired. I was looking right at it. In Newark, New Jersey, we're talking with Marcus Samuelson, who, in addition to being an amazing chef, is a great editor. So, Marcus, can we talk for a minute about your life, your current life? How do you prioritize these days? How do you decide, with all the things you have going on? I mean, you write, you have television projects, you have restaurants globally now.
Well, my design. I'm lucky enough that my wife very often comes with us when we do things. And our kid is so small, so he can come with us. You know? So that's a luxury for us to be able to.
Yeah.
Because that's sort of the core and the foundation for us.
Right.
For me to function. Right.
Yes.
So whether I cook in London or here, like, they can come with me, you know?
Yeah.
That's the foundation. That's part of the morning routine. And
normalizes
things.
That's great.
First of all.
Does that give you a feeling of stability as you travel around?
And also love and connectivity. The stability, absolutely.
Yeah.
Then,
and you get to share it all with someone.
You get to share it, and we get to talk it over.
Yeah.
And when you drop the hostess stand, or you realize it's not the biggest deal in the world, but at that moment, it's the biggest thing in the world.
Right? Yeah.
And the computer crashes, and like, wait a minute, it has happened before. And we go back to Notepad.
So, right.
You know? But it's a little bit of that. And then I think a lot about the urges that you have. Like, my ability to cook comes from an urge of wanting to express myself and please at the same time.
Right.
Writing is the same thing. You know, it's something that Yes Chef took a long time, several years.
Yeah.
And
like 4 or 5,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, 5 years.
Yeah.
And it was an urge of being able to share the story.
Yeah.
And, you know, Rooster Book took a very long time.
Yeah.
But that came also out of me, of course, because of the experience of the restaurant, right?
Yes.
But people have always asked me, when you do follow-up to Yes Chef, so I'm like, I don't know, in 20 years when you have that new urge, I'll tell you the second part of that chapter.
It is interesting that you did it when you did, because once in a while, sometimes I'll approach somebody, like in their 40s, you know, and they'll be like, I got too much of my story left. Yeah. I don't want to do it. I'm too young, you know, but you felt very strongly that you had something to say.
And share. It's also very much a letter to a young cook coming up.
Right.
You know, that this is possible, and here are the steps and mistakes that I made. Don't do them or see them coming.
Yes.
But I enjoy that process of making cookbooks, making content, because it's all around food.
Yeah.
But it's a different relationship to food.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And you have to express yourself very, very different.
Yeah.
You know, which I like.
Yeah. Is it hard for you at this point? I mean, the ability to compartmentalize. You and I are sitting here. When I got here, just so to give listeners a sense, there was a media day going on here. There were a bunch of reporters.
Yeah.
There were photographers. You were posing for all kinds of pictures. You were doing quickie interviews.
Yeah.
Then you come and sit down with me.
Yeah.
We're sitting here with these two microphones.
Yeah.
Your restaurant is literally coming to life around us.
Yeah.
You probably went off on the break.
Or breaking down.
I doubt that.
Yeah, you
but,
heard this.
You know, I'm going to knock on wood. But you know, you went around the corner and probably made some decision while we took our break. But you're totally focused on this interview.
Yeah.
Has that been something you've had to develop over the years? Is that a natural ability that you've had to compartmentalize?
You also don't realize this is the best part of my day. I get to speak to my friend. So this is a nice break.
Marcus, you
know, which I really love.
As with every time I see you, you've made my day.
Yeah. No, so it's like one of these things like, oh, this is my break, by the way.
Okay.
But the team I have are very loyal.
Yeah.
They are very committed. They understand the vision we've created together at this point.
Yes. Yeah.
It's you know, you're gonna see now these are the artists coming in. They're all artists.
I'm sorry, the
artists,
artists are coming,
coming in here now. And they are the one that we've discussed about, the local art that is here.
Yeah.
How do we interpretate that?
Yes.
And that's from them.
Right.
So but the cooks, we're still fighting about the dough. We're still arguing about the sauce.
Still 2 days out.
Yeah, but it's.
Yeah.
But I love that though.
Right.
Like Mike is in there. He maybe sent me 500 pictures of different ovens.
Yeah.
He has, I don't know, 50 different recipes of making pizza dough.
Yeah.
And we, you know, we're down to, you know, to the wire, you know.
Right.
But thank God, bless him. It's amazing.
Yeah.
You know,
is he a new? This is your chef here.
Yeah, Mike. Yeah, Mike has worked with me for years, but he's this position where he's really driving it, right?
Yeah.
He hasn't. So, but he's ready.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't know he's ready. He is ready.
Yeah. That's the phrase you always hear, right? He's ready. I've heard guys say that to me over the years about someone who was their sous chef or whatever. What? How do you even? Is that just a vibe at this point?
Well, he's asking the right questions. And constantly looking for answers to them, right? Asking questions about your food is very important.
Yeah.
You know, is the texture there? Is the, like when you rip up a pizza dough, is it really, you know, tangible enough? Where is it chewy? Where is it too chewy?
So when you start to see the questions kind of...
Ask questions.
Like rising to the top, like cream does. Like your head, they kind of move up the level of sophistication and experience, and you go.
And your willingness, I'm not just saying it's great.
Right.
It's good. Can we make it gooder? Can it become great?
To have that sort of almost like but also like an entrepreneurial sense of ownership, right?
He doesn't know that yet. He doesn't. But that doesn't mean.
But do what I just say make sense? I feel like that's when you're looking for someone who can manage a project in any business, you want them to act as if it's their business at some level.
Oh, he is way beyond. He's like, but he doesn't think about from an entrepreneur. He just thinks about, he just wants to make the best pie.
Right.
That's it.
That's it. Just as a point of pride, just because that's how it is.
Because he can.
Yeah.
And he thought about it.
Right.
And he's served it on staff meal at Rooster, and he served it at events, and now it's ready to showtime.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Jersey's a great place because there's great pie shops in Jersey.
Yeah.
So now, okay, let's go.
Right.
And we're not going to be perfect.
Yeah.
But
you've made your peace with that at this point in life.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, the ambition is there. Like, let's go.
Yeah.
And then, but so it's asking those questions and showing the dedication for the work it takes to do that.
Right.
Whether that's pasta or a pizza.
Yeah.
And then doing the homework, like, for that. So, I mean, that's it. That's one aspect of it.
Yeah.
And then but the bar wants the same level of pride and so on. The art and the culture, same level of pride.
Yeah.
The front desk, same level of pride. Now you have these things pushing up against each other.
Yeah.
And it's...
Right.
It's sweaty.
How do you stay current on food these days? Maybe current's the wrong word. What do you do for, you know, I wrote this thing years ago about you and your kitchen back in when you used to have that apartment with sand on the floor. And spices that you had painted the walls with?
Yeah.
Like, where do you get that sort of thing for yourself these days? Where do you get that? How do you keep that spark after all these
years?
Young
cooks, young bartenders.
You get stuff from them? They feed you?
Mixologist. And I'm lucky that I work in Sweden, London, and New York, right?
Right.
So, you know, where our bar scene in New York, in London and in Sweden is very similar.
Yes.
But different from in New York.
Yeah.
And those guys are cooks. Those bartenders, the mixologists are cooks.
Right.
At this point.
Yes.
They're asking the same notes
totally
about
agree.
Texture and about
balance.
Freshness and balance.
Yeah, sure.
And they just ended up in the bar, but they're cooks.
Yeah.
And they're pushing you like crazy, which I love.
Uh-huh. And then you take your experience and your palate and your kitchen wisdom and you edit and refine.
Figure out can you execute this? What is if the barback, if I ask the barback right now to step up, can they? And if they can't, then we're not where we should be, right? Because that's their line cook, that's their commis, that's their... So that has been a huge driver. And then the diversity of the kitchen staff that, you know, in Stockholm, I work with this Peruvian guy.
Yeah.
It's a different level of drive in terms of introducing me Peruvian ingredients.
Yeah.
Right? There's obviously, they're probably like 2,000 years old. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Right.
But they're new to me.
Yeah.
So that is very exciting to me. And how do I then migrate that over here?
Yeah.
And how do we...
And that's got introduced to you in the context of staff meal or in the context of stuff that went on the menu?
No, it's just, you see it once in. You see it's a look. It's a question. It's a showing up.
Yeah.
And, you know, and asking my cooks in Stockholm, like, we have a restaurant that is all vegetarian and we have our garden on the roof.
Yeah.
That came from the cooks urging... Right. Like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
Come on, man.
This may be a weird question, but I'm going to ask it. Because having known you for so long before it all came together, right? You're a pretty famous guy.
Yeah. I don't know.
Do you, you talk about getting feedback from the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You talk about training young cooks. Yeah. You talk, as you've moved up the line of recognition, right, to the level that it's at now for you, has it been a challenge ever for you to get people to just talk to you normally, give you honest feedback, or do you, has that not become a problem? Because I will tell you, talking to you and when I see you, you don't seem very, you do seem to have maintained your, just your essence.
No, so but I wonder, my essence is love for food and I love my craft.
Yeah.
And I want to improve. And if Mike 24 can show me how to improve.
Yeah,
let's go for it. Let's go.
Yeah,
and you know, we're student, Andrew. You're a student of your craft, and if you wouldn't be, there are many ways to. We're lucky to live in a place where there's many ways to make a living.
Yes,
this is not for me about making a living. Yeah. This is much deeper than that. This
yes,
is, I'm generally excited about learning.
Yeah.
And improving my team and improving myself.
Yeah,
in this.
Yeah,
and it's humbling.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, I'm not... I'm actually think the fame game gets away. Like, I'm... You know, I want to work. And then people come up and take, you know, whatever, 100 selfies a day or whatever. But one part of it is thank you for having an audience, right?
Sure.
And people are just excited to be on the journey. But for me, it's sometimes like you just feel like... But I just... Like, let me just go and do that.
I understand. Your staff is very good. I've just been given the high sign that you need to need to go to an event. So I'm going to respect that. Listen.
We're cooking today at an event and then coming back here. Okay. And so half of the crew comes with me and half goes to an event.
Got it. I should probably say this off the air, but I just got the second high sign.
Third is the one.
Listen, you came up at a time when a lot of guys, your peers, your contemporaries are all now, a lot of people are very famous, lots of restaurants around the world, lots of projects. There is nobody I'm happier for than
you.
I still see you as that guy I knew when you first got here. I still do.
Thank you.
So thanks for making the time
so
for this,
much.
My friend.
And when Phil had that hair back in 95, what was the number one song?
I don't know. Maybe Alanis Morissette. And that's our show. A huge thank you to Marcus Samuelson for making time during a busier than usual week. Marcus, thank you. It was wonderful to see you. All the best with the new restaurant. For everyone listening, a happy Thanksgiving, especially to you cooks who are working on the holiday. I hope you have a great service, and thanks for being out there. I want to invite everybody, as always, to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. The handle is at Chef Podcast. And I'd love if you want to dialogue, for you to dialogue with me there. I will respond to comments or tweets, and you can do that in any of those three places. You can follow me personally on Instagram and Twitter, at Toqueland Andrew, TOQUELAND Andrew on Twitter and Instagram. And if you'd like to subscribe to the show, you can do that. Probably most of you would do that on either iTunes or Stitcher. And as always, if you'd like to leave us a rating or a review, we'd really appreciate it, and it really does help other listeners find the show. So if you would do that, we'd really appreciate it. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening, and we'll look forward to seeing you back here next week on Andrew Talks to Chefs.